Chapter 47. Camps of people were disposed in the lordly gardens of Caesar, formerly gardens of Domitius and Agrippina. They were disposed also on the Campus Martius, in the gardens of Pompey, Sallust, and Mersinus, in porticos, tennis courts, splendid summer houses, and buildings erected for wild beasts. Peacocks, flamingos, swans, ostriches, gazelles, African antelopes, and deer, which had served as ornaments to those gardens, went under the knives of the rabble. Provisions began to come in now from Austria so abundantly that one might walk, as on a bridge, over ships, boats, and barges from one bank of the Tiber to the other. Wheat was sold at the unheard of low price of 3 sestertia, and was given gratis to the indigent. Immense supplies of wine, olives, and chestnuts were brought to the city. Sheep and cattle were driven in every day from the mountains. Wretches who before the fire had been hiding in alleys of the Suburra, and were perishing of hunger in ordinary times, had a more pleasant life now. The danger of famine was averted completely, but it was more difficult to suppress robbery, murder, and abuses. A nomadic life ensured impunity to thieves, the more easily, since they proclaimed themselves admirers of Caesar, and were unsparing of plaudits wherever he appeared. Moreover, when, by the pressure of events, the authorities were in abeyance, and there was a lack of armed force, to quell insolence in a city inhabited by the dregs of contemporary mankind, deeds were done which passed human imagination. Every night there were battles and murders. Every night boys and women were snatched away. At the Porta Muginus, where there was a halting place for herds driven in from the Campania, it came to engagements in which people perished by hundreds. Every morning the banks of the Tiber were covered with drowned bodies, which no one collected. These decayed quickly, because of heat heightened by fire, and filled the air with foul odors. Sickness broke out on the camping grounds, and the more timorous foresaw a great pestilence. But the city burned on unceasingly. Only on the 6th day, when the fire reached empty spaces on the Esquiline, where an enormous number of houses had been demolished purposely, did it weaken. But the piles of burning cinders gave such strong light, yet that people would not believe, that the end of the catastrophe had come. In fact, the fire burst forth with fresh force on the 7th night in the buildings of Tigellinus, but at short duration for lack of fuel. Burnt houses, however, fell here and there, and threw up towers of flame and pillars of sparks. But the glowing ruins began to grow black on the surface. After sunset the heavens ceased to gleam with bloody light, and only after dark did blue tongues quiver above the extended black waste, tongues which rose from piles of cinders. Of the 14 divisions of Rome there remained only 4, including the Trans-Tiber. Flames had consumed all the others. When at last the piles of cinders had been turned into ashes, an immense space was visible from the Tiber to the Esquiline, gray, gloomy, dead. In this space stood rows of chimneys, like columns over graves in a cemetery. Among these columns gloomy crowds of people moved about in the daytime, some seeking for precious objects, others for the bones of those dear to them. And the night dogs howled above the ashes and ruins of former dwellings. All the bounty and aid shown by Caesar to the populace did not restrain evil speech and indignation. Only the herd of robbers, criminals, and homeless ruffians, who could eat, drink, and rob enough, were contented. People who had lost all their property and their nearest relatives were not won over by the opening of gardens, the distribution of bread, or the promise of games and gifts. The catastrophe had been too great and unparalleled. Others, in whom was hidden yet some spark of love for the city and their birthplace, were brought to despair by news that the old name Roma was to vanish, and that from the ashes of the capital Caesar would erect a new city called Neropolis. A flood of hatred rose, and swelled every day, despite the flatteries of the Augustians and the calumnies of Tigellinus. Nero, more sensitive than any former Caesar to the favor of the populace, thought with alarm that in the sullen and mortal struggle which B was waging with patricians in the Senate, he might lack support. The Augustians themselves were not less alarmed, for any morning might bring them destruction. Tigellinus thought of summoning certain legions from Asia Minor. Vatinius, who laughed even when slapped on the face, lost his humor. Vitellius lost his appetite. Others were taking counsel among themselves how to avert the danger, for it was no secret that were an outburst to carry off Caesar, not one of the Augustians would escape, except, perhaps, Petronius. To their influence were ascribed the madnesses of Nero, to their suggestions all the crimes which he committed. Hatred for them almost surpassed that for Nero. Hence some began to make efforts to rid themselves of responsibility for the burning of the city. But to free themselves they must clear Caesar also from suspicion, or no one would believe that they had not caused the catastrophe. Tigellinus took counsel on this subject with Domitius Afer, and even with Seneca, though he hated him. Poppaea, who understood that the ruin of Nero would be her own sentence, took the opinion of her confidants, and of Hebrew priests, for it had been admitted for years that she held the faith of Jehovah. Nero found his own methods, which, frequently terrible, were more frequently foolish, and fell now into terror, now into childish delight, but above all he complained. On a time a long and fruitless consultation was held in the house of Tiberius, which had survived the fire. Petronius thought it best to leave troubles, go to Greece, thence to Egypt and Asia Minor. The journey had been planned long before. Why defer it, when in Rome were sadness and danger? Caesar accepted the counsel with eagerness. But Seneca, when he had thought a while, said, "It is easy to go, but it would be more difficult to return." "By Heracles," replied Petronius, "we may return at the head of Asiatic legions." "This will I do," exclaimed Nero. But Tigellinus opposed. He could discover nothing himself, and if the arbiter's idea had come to his own head he would beyond doubt have declared it the saving one. But with him the question was that Petronius might not be a second time the only man who in difficult moments could rescue all and every one. "Hear me, divinity," said he, "this advice is destructive. Before thou art at Ostia a civil war will break out. Who knows but one of the surviving collateral descendants of the divine Augustus will declare himself Caesar, and what shall we do, if the legions take his side?" "We shall try," answered Nero, "that there be no descendants of Augustus. There are not many now, hence it is easy to rid ourselves of them." "It is possible to do so, but is it a question of them alone? No longer ago than yesterday my people heard in the crowd that a man like Thrasea should be Caesar." Nero bit his lips. After a while he raised his eyes and said, "Insatiable and thankless. They have grain enough, and they have coal on which to bake cakes. What more do they want?" "Vengeance," replied Tigellinus. Silence followed. Caesar rose on a sudden, extended his hand, and began to declaim, "Hearts call for vengeance, and vengeance wants a victim." Then, forgetting everything, he said, with radiant face, "Give me the tablet and stylus to write this line. Never could Lucan have composed the like. Have ye noticed that I found it in a twinkle?" "Oh, incomparable," exclaimed a number of voices. Nero wrote down the line, and said, "Yes, vengeance wants a victim." Then he cast a glance on those around him. "Be but if we spread the report that Vatinius gave command to burn the city, and devote him to the anger of the people?" "O divinity! Who am I?" exclaimed Vatinius. "True. One more important than thou is demanded. Is it Vatinius?" Vatinius grew pale, but began to laugh. "My fat," answered he, "might start the fire again." But Nero had something else on his mind. In his soul he was looking for a victim who might really satisfy the people's anger, and he found him. "Tigellinus," said he after a while, "it was thou who didst burn Rome." A shiver ran through those present. they understood that Caesar had ceased to jest this time, and that a moment had come which was pregnant with events. The face of Tigellinus was wrinkled, like the lips of a dog about to bite. "I burn Rome at thy command," said he. And the two glared at each other like a pair of devils. Such silence followed, that the buzzing of flies was heard as they flew through the atrium. "Tigellinus," said Nero, "dost thou love me?" "Thou knowest, Lord." "Sacrifice thyself for me." "O divine Caesar," answered Tigellinus, "why present the sweet cup which I may not raise to my lips? The people are muttering and rising. Dost thou wish the Praetorians also to rise?" A feeling of terror pressed the hearts of those present. Tigellinus was Praetorian prefect, and his words had the direct meaning of a threat. Nero himself understood this, and his face became pallid. At that moment Epaphroditus, Caesar's freedman, entered, announcing that the divine Augusta wished to see Tigellinus, as there were people in her apartments whom the prefect ought to hear. Tigellinus bowed to Caesar, and went out with a face calm and contemptuous. Now, when they had wished to strike him, he had shown his teeth. He had made them understand who he was, and, knowing Nero's cowardice, he was confident that that ruler of the world would never dare to raise a hand against him. Nero sat in silence for a moment, then, seeing that those present expected some answer, he said, "I have reared a serpent in my bosom." Petronius shrugged his shoulders, as if to say that it was not difficult to pluck the head from such a serpent. "What wilt thou say? Speak, advise," exclaimed Nero, noticing this motion. I trust in thee alone, for thou hast more sense than all of them, and thou lovest me." Petronius had the following on his lips: "Make me Praetorian prefect, I will deliver Tigellinus to the people, and pacify the city in a day." But his innate slothfulness prevailed. To be prefect meant to bear on his shoulders Caesar's person, and also thousands of public affairs. And why should he perform that labor? Was it not better to read poetry in his splendid library, look at vases and statues, or hold to his breast the divine body of Eunice, twining her golden hair through his fingers, and inclining his lips to her coral mouth? Hence he said, "I advise the journey to Achaia." "Ah," answered Nero, "I looked for something more from thee. The Senate hates me. If I depart, who will guarantee that it will not revolt and proclaim someone else Caesar? The people have been faithful to me so far, but now they will follow the Senate. By Hades, if that Senate and that people had one head. Permit me to say, O divinity, that if thou desire to save Rome, there is need to save even a few Romans," remarked Petronius, with a smile. "What care I for Rome and Romans?" complained Nero. "I should be obeyed in Attica. Here only treason surrounds me. All desert me, and ye are making ready for treason. I know it, I know it. Ye do not even imagine what future ages will say of you, if ye desert such an artist as I am." Here he tapped his forehead on a sudden, and cried, "True. Amid these cares even I forget who I am." Then he turned to Petronius with a radiant face. "Petronius," said he, "the people murmur, but if I take my lute, and go to the Campus Martius, if I sing that song to them which I sang during the conflagration, dost thou not think that I will move them, as Orpheus moved wild beasts?" To this Tullius Senecia, who was impatient to return to his slave women brought in from Antium, and who had been impatient a long time, replied, "Beyond doubt, O Caesar, if they permit thee to begin." "Let us go to Hellas," cried Nero, with disgust. But at that moment Poppaea appeared, and with her Tigellinus. The eyes of those present turned to him unconsciously, for never had triumphator ascended the capital with pride such as his, when he stood before Caesar. He began to speak slowly and with emphasis, in tones through which the bite of iron, as it were, was heard. "Listen, O Caesar, for I can say, I have found. The people want vengeance, they want not one victim, but hundreds, thousands. Hast heard, Lord, who Christos was, he who was crucified by Pontius Pilate? And knowest thou who the Christians are? Have I not told thee of their crimes and foul ceremonies, of their predictions, that fire would cause the end of the world? People hate and suspect them. No one has seen them in a temple at any time, for they consider our gods evil spirits. They are not in the stadium, for they despise horse races. Never have the hands of a Christian done the honor with plaudits. Never has one of them recognized thee as God. They are enemies of the human race, of the city, and of thee. The people murmur against thee, but thou hast given me no command to burn Rome, and I did not burn it. The people want vengeance. Let them have it. The people want blood and games. Let them have them. The people suspect thee. Let their suspicion turn in another direction. Nero listened with amazement at first, but as Tigellinus proceeded, his actor's face changed, and assumed in succession expressions of anger, sorrow, sympathy, indignation. Suddenly he rose, and, casting off the toga, which dropped at his feet, he raised both hands and stood silent for a time. At last he said, in the tones of a tragedian, O Zeus, Apollo, hear, Athene, Persephone, and all ye immortals, why did ye not come to aid us? What has this hapless city done to those cruel wretches, that they burned it so inhumanly? They are enemies of mankind and of thee, said Poppaea. Do justice, cried others. Punish the incendiaries. The gods themselves call for vengeance. Nero sat down, dropped his head to his breast, and was silent a second time, as if stunned by the wickedness of which he had heard. But after a while he shook his hands, and said, What punishments, what tortures befit such a crime? But the gods will inspire me, and, aided by the powers of Tartarus, I will give my poor people such a spectacle, that they will remember me for ages with gratitude. The forehead of Petronius was covered with a sudden cloud. He thought of the danger hanging over Lydia and over Vinicius, whom he loved, and over all those people whose religion he rejected, but of whose innocence he was certain. He thought also that one of those bloody orgies would begin which his eyes, those of an aesthetic man, could not suffer. But above all he thought, I must save Vinicius, who will go mad, if that maiden perishes. And this consideration outweighed every other, for Petronius understood well that he was beginning a game far more perilous than any in his life. He began, however, to speak freely and carelessly, as his wont was when criticizing or ridiculing plans of Caesar and the Augustans that were not sufficiently aesthetic. Ye have found victims. That is true. Ye may send them to the arena or array them in painful tunics. That is true also. But hear me. Ye have authority, ye have praetorians, ye have power, then be sincere, at least, when no one is listening. Deceive the people, but deceive not one another. Give the Christians to the populace, condemn them to any torture ye like, but have courage to say to yourselves that it was not they who burned Rome. Fie! Ye call me arbiter legantiarum. Hence I declare to you that I cannot endure wretched comedies. Fie! How all this reminds me of the theatrical booths near the Porta Asinaria, in which actors play the parts of gods and kings, to amuse the suburban rabble, and when the play is over wash down onions with sour wine, or get blows of clubs. Be gods and kings in reality, for I say that ye can permit yourselves the position. As to thee, O Caesar, thou hast threatened us with the sentence of coming ages, but think, those ages will utter judgment concerning thee also. By the divine Clio, Nero, ruler of the world, Nero, a god, burned Rome, because he was as powerful on earth as Zeus on Olympus. Nero the poet loved poetry, so much that he sacrificed to it his country. From the beginning of the world no one did the like, no one ventured on the like. I beseech thee in the name of the double-crowned Libethrites, renounce not such glory, for songs of thee will sound to the end of ages. What will Priam be when compared with thee? What Agamemnon? What Achilles? What the gods themselves? We need not say that the burning of Rome was good, but it was colossal and uncommon. I tell thee, besides, that the people will raise no hand against thee. It is not true that they will. Have courage, guard thyself against acts unworthy of thee, for this alone threatens thee, that future ages may say, Nero burned Rome. But as a timid Caesar and a timid poet he denied the great deed out of fear, and cast the blame of it on the innocent. Apostrophe, the arbiter's words produced the usual deep impression on Nero. But Petronius was not deceived as to this, that what he had said was a desperate means which in a fortunate event might save the Christians, it is true, but might still more easily destroy himself. He had not hesitated, however, for it was a question at once of Vinicius whom he loved, and of hazard with which he amused himself. The dice are thrown, said he to himself, and we shall see how far fear for his own life outweighs in the monkey his love of glory. And in his soul he had no doubt that fear would outweigh. Meanwhile silence fell after his words. Poppaea and all present were looking at Nero's eyes, as at a rainbow. He began to raise his lips, drawing them to his very nostrils, as was his custom, when he knew not what to do. At last disgust and trouble were evident on his features. Lord, cried Tigellinus, on noting this, permit me to go, for when people wish to expose thy person to destruction, and call thee, besides, a cowardly Caesar, a cowardly poet, an incendiary, and a comedian, my ears cannot suffer such expressions. I have lost, thought Petronius. But turning to Tigellinus, he measured him with a glance in which was that contempt for a ruffian which is felt by a great lord who is an exquisite. Tigellinus, said he, it was thou whom I called a comedian, for thou art one at this very moment. Is it because I will not listen to thy insults? It is because thou art feigning boundless love for Caesar, thou who a short while since wert threatening him with praetorians, which we all understood as did he. Tigellinus, who had not thought Petronius sufficiently daring to throw dice such as those on the table, turned pale, lost his head, and was speechless. This was, however, the last victory of the arbiter over his rival, for that moment Poppaea said, Lord, how permit that such a thought should even pass through the head of anyone, and all the more that anyone should venture to express it aloud in thy presence? Punish the insolent, exclaimed Vitellius. Nero raised his lips again to his nostrils, and, turning his near-sighted, glassy eyes on Petronius, said, Is this the way thou payest me for the friendship which I had for thee? If I am mistaken, show me my error, said Petronius, but know that I speak that which love for thee dictates. Punish the insolent, repeated Vitellius. Punish, called a number of voices. In the atrium there was a murmur and a movement, four people began to withdraw from Petronius. Even Tullius Senecia, his constant companion at the court, pushed away, as did young Nerva, who had shown him hitherto the greatest friendship. After a while Petronius was alone on the left side of the atrium, with a smile on his lips, and gathering with his hands the folds of his toga, he waited yet for what Caesar would say or do. Ye wish me to punish him, said Caesari, but he is my friend and comrade. Though he has wounded my heart, let him know that for friends this heart has naught but forgiveness. I have lost, and am ruined, thought Petronius. Meanwhile Caesar rose, and the consultation was ended. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.